Hello, this is the Trimmed Down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m, and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey, and you're listening to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life. From maybe that first track they ever heard, right through to one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest this week is blind music producer, musician, audio engineer and accessibility consultant Jason Dasent, who has over 20 years in the music industry. Originally from Trinidad and now based in London. Hello, Jason, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hi, Toby. Thanks so much for having me, and I'm really excited about doing this and sharing a bit of my musical life with you and with our audience.
So I bet selecting your tracks for you as a producer and musician must have been quite a hard task for you, Jason.
Oh, yeah, definitely, actually, you know, because, I mean, you like so many songs over the years, and it was a bit difficult choosing seven, but, you know, I tried to choose seven that I really felt, you know, represent who I am as a person, first of all, and secondly, as a music producer.
And the first track that you have chosen is one by The Carpenters and one for you as a producer that you keep on coming back to time and time again for producing lush harmonies. Before we talk a little bit about why you keep on coming back to this particular track when producing lush harmonies, could you tell me where you were when you first heard it?
I heard it a lot because, I mean, I was born in the 70s and my memory has been on a rocking chair in our TV room, actually, you know, with the stereo, you know, families would have like a stereo setup. And I remember Carpenters playing often and hearing the song We've Only Just Begun and, you know, not being aware that it would play any part in my life, but it just felt right. It just felt this makes me happy, you know, it felt right, but I had no idea, you know, that I would even have a career in music, you know, but something about it just felt right.
And where was home for you at this time?
Okay, I'm from Trinidad in the Caribbean, and I grew up in a town called Cascade, and that's where my home was, basically.
As a producer, you say you keep on coming back to this track for producing lush harmonies. Why do you keep on coming back to it? Is it something about the Carpenters' voice, or is it the sort of recording techniques that they used back then?
Okay, well, you just answered it for me. It's both of those, actually. Well, you know, when you, for any of us who are fortunate enough to experience Carpenters' music, you know what their harmony sounds like, you know, that brother and sister, Richard and Karen. Their voices just come together so beautifully, and then Richard's arrangements, lush arrangements, you know, their harmony and chords that they use, and, you know, the orchestration, it's just right. That's the only thing I can say about it. It's just right.
We've only just begun to live.
We've only just begun there by The Carpenters, and what a voice The Carpenters have. Your next track, Jason, marks the time when you, I think, first started your musical journey and career. What made you want to get into music and music producing? And was it something at that time that you were sort of advised to do or thought of as a good career for somebody who was vision impaired?
Okay, at an early age, like about 9 or 10, I started becoming interested in music, you know, synthesizers. My big brother, Dean, you know, he's not a musician, but, you know, he, along with the rest of my family, saw that, you know, I had a leaning towards music production. And like, different members of my family played different parts, right? Some people would, you know, advise me, like my sister Jillian was into, like, she played some piano and, you know, I kind of got from her, you know, like the interest in things like chords and melody and stuff. But from Dane taught me about the cool world of synthesizers, although he wasn't a part of it, you know, in particular. He wasn't a part of the music industry. But, you know, we would watch, you know, concerts together on TV, and, you know, we would go to like live concerts back in Trinidad. And he got me interested in synthesizers, you know, the cool side of music, technology, synthesizers and drum machines, etc. And Swing Out Sister Breakout came out then, and, you know, it's Andy Connell and Corinne Jury, and they made a lot of use, they made a lot of use of synths, you know, and drum machines, etc., in their music. And this seemed pretty cool to me, like, yeah, this is what I want to do. You know, I love the music, I love the chords and the harmonies and stuff, but I also love music tech, and I want to program and sequence and program drum machines and play synthesizers and make different songs. And this is what Breakout represents to me. Of course, Corinne's voice, you know, is a voice that I like a lot. You know, I love her texture, I love her feel, definitely, and Andy's arrangement. So this was a milestone for me, the song Breakout.
And did anybody advise you against taking that path into the music industry at all?
No, no one did, actually. Everybody around me in my circle was quite supportive.
And is there a part, you know, part that you mentioned, obviously, the synth sounds and the voices of Swing Out Sister. Is there anything else to this particular track that sort of marks it for you as the starting point of your music career?
The groove itself, you know, it's very rhythmic, very, might I say, sexy, you know? Something about it, just cool, just really nice, just exciting.
Swing Out Sister there, and Breakout, and a track that marks the start of your musical career, Jason. The next track you have chosen, Jason, is a good example of the use of early, you know, synths back in the early 80s. And it's, you know, with the Roland Jupiter 8 and the Yamaha DX7, these are the synthesizers which I remember seeing on Top of the Pops. Lots of bands had them, and you always had somebody standing behind DX7 or something like that. I wanted to find out why you were, I think you may have probably touched on this a little bit, but maybe you could expand a little bit more about why you were so fascinated about these two particular synths.
The first thing I was fascinated with, or before the synths, the first person I should say is Whitney. Whitney Houston's voice. You know, I can't imagine being where I am today before, if it wasn't for Whitney, because I learned, I think a lot of my style is developed around Whitney and that DX7 type feel, right? Mm-hmm. That Rhodes piano, well, really called like a DX piano. It's more like of an FM piano, but I guess it was based on kind of like how you would play a Rhodes, but the most gorgeous sound, and it was made by the DX7. So, you know, of course, you know, you're saving up all your little money from the jobs, odd jobs and stuff. Everybody wanted to have a DX7. I didn't have a DX7. You know, when I was young, you know, but now I have all the software synths and everything from Arturia, etc. So I have all these patches. But that DX piano was like, wow, if you are to have any chance in the music industry, in the modern music industry at that time in the 80s, you had to be playing that DX piano. And that's what Whitney represented. You know, it was the most gorgeous use of that particular sound. You know, and then, of course, well, all the other things that it did, like basses and stuff. I don't know if a Jupiter was used in Saving All My Love, but it was also a popular synth. So this is why I kind of put it in my bio, you know, that I was fascinated by the DX and the Jupiter. But even if it wasn't used in that song, it was as popular as the DX and used at the same time. So, you know, as a keyboardist of the day, DX7s, Jupiters, you know, along with like the Korgs and stuff like that that went along with it, and, you know, the Lin drum machine and everything. So it was just a time, it was a defining time in me saying, yeah, this is what I want to do. Starting to become a bit more professional. These are the tools that I have to use to make these songs, you know, and it just kind of brought it together. You know, it was a big part of the picture being painted in at that point in defining me. you know, on what I like doing, how I do it, my techniques of production. So it was a milestone time, you know, in my life.
And did you feel that seeing bands using synths like the DX7, that there was really a sort of a career in electronic music for you?
For sure.
And the Whitney Houston track, you were talking about the piano there. Is there anything else apart from obviously her voice as well, but anything else that really sort of stands out for you about this particular track?
Again, arrangement, melody, you know, structure, you know, that structure that Clive, I've heard that, you know, Clive Davis, you know, had a knack for picking a hit and saving All My Love For You. I can see exactly what they mean, you know. And of course, the producers, you know, they just did the string arrangements, everything about it. And thinking about it, that song may have actually been a Rhodes and not a DX7, but a lot of material on that album would have been DX7. You know, I'm thinking Greatest Love of All, things like How Will I Know would have used DX7s, I imagine. But it was on that album, is Rhodes and DX7, big time. But yeah, just the arrangement of Saving All My Love For You, that's what you call a hit. You know, I still hear it and it's still Paul's reason even up to today.
Well, Whitney Houston there and Saving All My Love and the sound of the 80s synths too. We are sticking with electronic sounds for your next track, Jason. It's one by the Pet Shop Boys. You say that this particular track marks your commitment to all things musical and electronic as well. And I wondered, you know, sort of at the time, was there a bit of a backlash against all these synths coming in? Did people say, well, you know, electronic music is not real music? Did you get that sort of feeling then? Or was it a case of, you know, this is electronic music and, you know, we can see the future of this revolution in music production?
The world that I grew up in was, I mean, of course, I would kind of, you know, hang around with more keyboard players than the guitarists and drummers and stuff. And it was a time where, you know, people would say the comments like, you know, no more room for drummers and stuff like that. And drum machines are taking over. And it turned out to not be the case, right? Because there's room for everybody, you know. I like to work with live drummers and stuff, but I equally like to work with programmed drums, etc. And Western Girls was, you know, big use of the Fairlight, you know. So at that point, you know, I became more involved in synths, you know, learning about the different synthesizers, etc. The big one for Pet Shop Boys was the Fairlight, right? And it was that situation, you know, where Fairlight, it could sound like anything. You can sample a dog barking, you could sample any, you can make any sound with a Fairlight, you know, whereas like the DX and the Jupiters were actually synthesizers that you programmed using algorithms and waveforms and oscillators and stuff. The Fairlight was samples, and you could make this thing sound like anything you want to. And Pet Shop Boys' use of the Fairlight was just amazing. You know, that, again, lush orchestration, groovy stuff, you know, rhythmic stuff, really nice stuff. And it makes me think, yeah, okay, if I had to make a decision at that point, what I want, what musician I want to be, what instrument I want to play, it was a keyboardist for sure. You know, nothing else. You know, I mean, I like playing a bit of guitar, and I like, you know, I could normally sit at most instruments and make it sound like music. But when Pet Shop Boys, Western Girls came out, I want to be a synth guy. You know, I want to program, I want to sequence. You know, I knew it before, but at that time, this is what I am. I'm a synth guy.
And there was a lot more to it, because a lot of people just, you know, saw a synth or a keyboard or maybe I can't remember. Yeah, MacBook on top of the Pops or something back in the day, and you know, the Pet Shop Boys behind it. But people's opinion was probably, oh, it's just, you know, it's electronic music. But there's a lot more to it. It's not just like pressing a few keys on a keyboard or just kicking a drum machine and making it start. There's a lot more to it.
And what was cool about it too is the time when you decided, you want to go on stage with 5 keyboards. You know, it's not like you go like with a guitar or a piano or a drum machine, which is equally as beautiful, you know. But I like the idea of going on stage with 5 keyboards. I mean, even being crazy about it, you know, as a teenager, so you go, you go on stage and you imagine the girls find you looking cool with these five keyboards around you. And, you know, it was just a fun time in life, you know.
How accessible were things back then? I suspect not very accessible for somebody who was blind or partially sighted.
Not accessible at all, except from your memory. The access was your memory and knowing that the third button to your right is preset up. The fourth button is preset down. If you turn the dial five times, you know, you'll get to this parameter and that sort of stuff, you know. So the accessibility was your ability to remember. Fortunately, the equipment used a lot of buttons and didn't have much reliance on things like touch screens as they do now, although amazing things are happening in terms of accessibility with touch screens, etc. You know, a lot of good stuff is happening. But, you know, there was this little interim period where the touch screens came out and it was like, oh boy, you know, we're not going to be able to use this. But that's changing now. But back in those days, a lot of buttons. And if you could remember where things are, you were usually okay.
And what sort of music were you making back then as well?
A lot of pop music, like music that I heard, like Whitney type stuff. Again, Pet Shop Boys, Swing Out Sister. A lot of the music that I heard, I was making similar music, you know. I was also doing a lot of Caribbean music as well. And that was my early foray into the world of advertising. So I was doing a lot of jingles, you know, for different advertising agencies back in Trinidad. At that age, I was doing that since I was like 15 years old. So I would go to school, go to high school during the day. And as soon as school is over, I'd be, you know, hired for session work at recording studios, etc. But I was kind of dabbling in all different types of music at that point, as I am still today.
And I know we've talked a little bit about West End Girls, but there's a fullness to their sound, isn't there, Pet Shop Boys? There's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of character to it, actually. It's really nice. Sometimes even almost theatrical, actually, and, you know, it even wants to remind me of, like, theatre music and, you know, very dramatic stuff. Really nice. Again, really nice use of the Fairlight in terms of their orchestration, you know, the way they program all the strings and all the samples they would use for sound effects, etc.
West End Girls there by the Pet Shop Boys, and I think that was their first ever single, and I can remember seeing them on Top of the Pops for the first time, which was really quite cool to see, you know, Pet Shop Boys and just two of them making that fantastic sound.
Yeah.
For your next track, Jason, you've chosen a Scottish singer and one with a wonderful voice, Sheena Easton, who started her career on a TV show called The Big Time, very different to Britain's Got Talent and The X Factor. And she sang with Prince as well and stuff and things like that. When did you first hear Sheena Easton's voice and what did you think of her voice at that time?
Around 1981, you know, when she came out with Morning Train and Modern Girl, you know. And what did I think of her voice? I thought it was perfect. I thought it was just perfect. I mean, that's the only word I could use to describe it. I keep saying perfect, but that's what I thought about it. You know, I loved it. I loved that song. I loved the songs that were written for her. I loved the productions. But Sheena Easton's voice was just what it's all about, you know, just perfect in every way.
Yeah, because you say it ticks so many boxes for you as a producer. Are you able to expand on that, or is it just that it does?
Okay, again, you know, I'm always into melody, right? A melody has to feel right. I mean, I guess right is subjective, but I like commercial melodies, you know, but with character, with soul, with feel, you know, and Sheena just has a lot of that. You know, she's very soulful, very warm, you know. She goes from the most tender, soft voice to be able to belt out with a richness, you know, with a bell-like quality, you know, and she just does it perfectly, you know, and that's what I hear when I listen to Sheena. You know, it may not be the most modern song now, but it's is right. That's what a singer is all about. And apparently she's very highly trained as a musician, you know, so her ability to understand things like scales and stuff like that, you know, I think, and arrangement and production, I think that goes a long way in what I call perfect, you know. I mean, I am self-taught, and a lot of people are, and I respect them, but I respect them a lot, and I love how they do things, but I also could usually tell, well, okay, yeah, this person has been to whatever music college, and, you know, it's a bit of a different song. You know, I think it's something, I mean, I've been doing this for over 20 years, and I would like to think now that, you know, I can pretty much do anything I want to, but I mean, if I had training like Sheena Easton, maybe I might have been able to do it before. But she represents to me like musicology, you know, but in a pop environment, if that makes any sense.
And the Sheena Easton track that you have chosen is For Your Eyes Only, obviously from the Bond film. And do you think this is a good example of a Bond theme track?
Yeah, of course. You know, it's very poignant. It's very emotional. You know, it's real. When I say real, you know, like For Your Eyes Only, the nights are never cold, you know, words like that, you know, you really know me, that's all I need to know. You know, there's some, it's conversational, you know, you like, you think she's talking to you, you know, and you would hope that, you know, I would love for somebody to tell me, you know, those things, you know, like a girl, you know, to tell me, my wife to feel that way about me, you know, like For Your Eyes Only, if that makes sense. You know, it's very intimate. It's beautiful.
For your eyes only can see me through the night. For your
The wonderful voice there of Sheena Easton, and maybe one of the best Bond themes, maybe there. I think some people might have me on that one, but I think maybe it could be one of the best Bond themes. The next track, Jason, is one that you and your wife sang at your wedding. And I'm not sure whether we've actually got a version of you both singing it, but I wondered how you and your wife, Sarah, first met. How did you first meet?
Okay, we met through my sister. Sarah worked with my sister. And they're both artists, visual artists. And they're both interior designers. And they worked together. And one day, my sister was doing a mural in my studio. You know, I was the musical director for a show called Digicel Rising Stars in Trinidad. Is run by a company called Digicel, which is a Caribbean-based phone company, you know, kind of like BT here. And they ran a show kind of like X Factor and Britain's Got Talent. And I was the musical director for the show for several years. And one of the locations that they would film the artists in is my studio, you know, so they would come, and the contestants would come to my studio, and my sister was doing a nice mural, and she invited Sarah to come and work with her on the mural, and that's where we met.
And what is the track that you and your wife did sing at your wedding, and what does it mean to you both when you hear it?
Okay, it's Always by Atlantic Star. Well, Sarah songs a lot like that singer. Sarah's a beautiful singer, actually. And she songs a lot like the singer from Atlantic Star, right? So, of course, it sits nicely on her voice, right? Somehow, it turned out that it should be a duet, and I should be I should sing with her, probably much to the disappointment of everyone who was unfortunate enough to hear me sing, right? Because you really don't want to hear me sing at all. But we did it together, and my best friend Ming and best man played an acoustic guitar for us while we sang, and it was a fun experience. And then after that wedding, our wedding was really a fun experience. And like after we did that, you know, after dinner and everything, our band actually played, you know, our band played our first dance and everything. And it was interesting because, again, my friend Ming, he played keyboards in my place, you know, while the band played. And it was like the first time I ever heard the band play without me. And it was interesting. And then Sarah and I joined them on stage, and it was just a lot of fun, you know. But we sang Always, and, you know, of course, you know, it's a special song to us. And, I mean, I love to hear Sarah sing Always among so many other songs, you know. And it's just special for us, you know. And, I mean, I guess it'll always bring back memories of our wedding day, a happy time, a happy day. It was a really crazy weekend because there was a storm, you know, in the Caribbean. You know, we have hurricanes, etc. And there was a hurricane due to hit Trinidad on that day of our wedding. And our wedding was right on the North Coast, right? So we were all driving to the wedding the day before, you know, because we stayed in a hotel, you know, the night before. And everybody, we were driving in our wedding party, and everybody else was driving out, right? Getting away from the storm. And we decided, whatever, this wedding is going to happen. And on the wedding day itself, the sun actually came out beautifully, and all our guests were able to come. And, you know, as like divine intervention from God, the weather held. And only after the wedding was over and everyone was safely back home, the storm came. Actually, at like 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, after the wedding. And it was really a beautiful day.
Girl, you are to me all that a woman should be, and I dedicate my life to you always. A love like yours is bringing...
Always by Atlantic Star there, and a song that brings back obviously fond memories to you and your wife, Sarah, of your wedding day, Jason. And Jason, before we talk about your final track, I just wanted to ask you a bit about your career as a music producer and sort of how that's gone over the years and what you see yourself doing in the future.
As you know by now, I'm from Trinidad and the Caribbean and a music producer, basically. And, you know, I work in all different areas of the industry. I live here in the UK now. I work in several areas of the industry, you know, from production of artists, of recording artists, to advertising, commercial jingles, etc. You know, I do some film composing. And another part of my career, which is related, which I got into a few years ago, is I'm an accessibility consultant. So I work with different manufacturers of musical instruments and both hardware and software. You know, DAWs, digital audio workstations, etc., keyboards, you know, in making their equipment accessible to visually impaired people like myself. And yes, I work with manufacturers to do that. I also work with music retailers and educational institutions, just in, you know, raising awareness of the need to make music technology accessible to not only visually impaired, but all differently abled music industry practitioners. And that's my career in a nutshell. You know, I've had lots of highs and lows, you know, but fortunately, I think the highs outweigh the lows. And in the future, I want to continue to build my name here in the UK, you know, hopefully produce some big name artists and work with some artists who are not big name and maybe help them to become big name in the future. You know, I want to get into the theatre side of things a bit here as well, too, you know. So I want to experience it all here in the UK, as I say. You know, we've been here since 2019, Sarah and I, and the UK has been good to us. And, you know, I pray that it continues to be good to us. And I think, you know, the UK has a lot to offer to us, and we have a lot to offer to the UK as well.
So, Jason, we now come to your final track, the one that you would like to pass on that might give people hope for the future. What is the track and why have you chosen it?
Okay, it's Shower the People from James Taylor. And I am a guy, I like to think I'm a pretty peaceful guy. You know, I like to see people happy. You know, I like to see people showing love to each other. And, you know, with all the sadness that's going on, you know, when I listen to this, I feel that, you know, if people showered the people you love with love, right? I mean, I think that kind of sums it up, you know, and just the line itself. You know, if we do that, I think it's going to be a better world. You know, it might sound a little bit airy-fairy and even sounds like, will this really happen? But I believe if everybody did their part and everybody, if we all showered the people we love with love, it can happen, you know? And even if it starts in our little area, our little corner of the world, you know, it can spread. And it's a song that makes me happy. It makes me smile always, you know, listening to it. And, you know, it's something I try to do, you know, on a daily basis. I don't always get it right, but I try to show the people I love with love. And, you know, this is why I chose it, because, you know, if I were to die tomorrow and I were to leave a message, you know, the message that I would like to leave, I would like to encourage everybody who is a part of my life to show other people we love with love.
Well, on that note, thank you very much indeed, Jason Dasent, for sharing your tracks of my life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks so much for having me, Toby. It's been a pleasure being here, and yeah, continue to enjoy and continue to do what you do, because the show is amazing. And thanks for having me.
You can play the game and you can act out the part, though you know it wasn't written for you. But tell me, how can you stand there with your broken heart?